that are doing similar things, and we want to expand upon that in our new factory. If you look in the back of the brochure, in the back of the presentation, there's the Tillamook Cheese, which has a real experience center when you go and you visit their factory, and you have a whole experience when you go to their factory and you go through their store. And there's a couple other chocolate factories, one in Seattle. If any of you have been to Theo Chocolate in Seattle, have tours. They do very well with the tours, and the people really experience the chocolate culture when they go there. We've been to Switzerland, another company I put in there, Lederach, have a glass catwalk that goes through the factory, and people, they see how everything's done, again, right from the roasting of the cocoa beans to the molding of the chocolate. And another one in there, a real fun one in Austria, Zotter, who's a real crazy guy, and he's in the middle of farmland 2 miles from Vienna. And if you can believe, 2-hour drive from Vienna, buses come and they visit the Zotter chocolate factory. People on cross-country bicycle tours come and they visit the Zotter factory. Tours from schools and tourists, and myself as a tourist went and visited. So it creates a real foodie experience, and people really have a love and a passion for chocolate, even more than myself and Wade at sometimes. They really feel, people, you say chocolate, and people kind of go crazy. So as we expand out of Irvine, California, into our next factory, two goals are kind of in our sights. One is that we want to be closer to our other factory, but we don't want to be in Canada with it. And so that, you know, makes it easier for transporting goods back and forth, and easier for commuting for myself or Wade to not have to fly across the country so much. But also to kind of expand on the vision that we started in Irvine and have a factory that people can come and visit, and we can market through that, and we create an experience with that. And as I said, we do tours, and we had great reaction from the tours that we've had in California. We've always enjoyed the passion that we have for the business, and to share that with the people that come and do the tours as well.
Yeah, a lot of people that do come to Irvine, and for the first time they've ever seen a cocoa tree, or what an actual pod looks like, what a pod tastes like inside, and they actually see the different segments of how the whole bean comes and actually gets the chocolate. And at the end of the tour, you push a button and you got liquid chocolate at the end. And it really was like people were fascinated, and they really get truly educated. So it becomes a real place of, it's our passion spills out to other people, and the people that come through, they really actually see what we're up to, and they really get a good education. So what Richard said is really actually worked really well in Irvine, and it could be done here for sure.
Well, funny enough, about 20 years ago, I mean, I grew up in Vancouver, now I live in California. But 20 years ago, myself and my brother actually looked to Blaine to build our expansion factory, and for whatever reason, I can't remember exactly why, but we never made it to Blaine. So here am I back again looking at Blaine, and I saw the Gateway land over there. I knew it as the airport. There's another chocolate guy in Blaine, Jeff Robinson, who took me up in his plane out of that Blaine airport. And I remember landing back in that little airport, and Jeff wondering why the light wasn't on for the landing gear and telling me everything was going to be okay. So I know it as the airport, and now I've come to see that it's the new Gateway Park. And I said, well, that would be a great spot, not only because it has enough land and we want to be able to grow, because moving chocolate factories is very expensive. We don't like moving the pipes and all the pumps and tanks and robotics and all the things that go into a chocolate factory. Really expensive and hard to move. So that site, I think it has about 7 acres. We like the fact that we can have room to grow on it, close proximity to our Canadian factory. But being on Pacific Highway there and the truck crossing and all the buses that come and all the tourists that come and all the cross-border traffic, I think it's a great opportunity for us to capitalize on the foodie visitor and the tourist to stop in and have a hot chocolate and go on the tour. And some of the ideas we have for the tour are the same thing which they do in Austria with the glass catwalk that goes out above the factory, and people can see down below how chocolate is made and packaged and wrapped and all that kind of thing. But that location in particular has a nice piece of land, has nice frontage, and I've looked at some of the numbers, the number of cars that cross, and you know, we want to attract people to come in and stop. taste the chocolate, kind of experience what we have to offer. I think benefit is to experience Blaine a little bit, not just come for gas and cheese, but make it a bit of a destination. These places that I put in the back of my offering here are really like the cheese guys and several other non-chocolate companies, but it's a growing trend where these places, we want them to become a destination. So people are thinking Sunday or Saturday or a reason to stop and not just eat or taste, but actually learn something about chocolate. So we learned that in Irvine, and we've seen that in these other factories, that we can create a real destination and a real kind of tourist destination, foodie destination. Seems like Blaine's becoming a real foodie town already, so I think that although there'd be two chocolate guys and plus the Nature's Path nut guy, but we all do different things. We don't do the same type of thing as Totally Chocolate, and we don't do the same type of thing as Nature's Path, so they're all quite unique in the things that we do, but the experience side of it is kind of exciting with that piece of land and the size of the property. And I put in the proposal sort of two, because we can't build out on the whole thing right away, but I put in two proposed stages. One would be sort of utilizing half of the lot and then having sort of a grass area where people could kind of sit in the grass, buses could park.
Chocolate Park.
I have the idea of inviting food trucks in to park around the park. So maybe on weekends or whatever, we could invite something like a food truck. This is conceptual, kind of my ideas flowing out, but, you know, starting with half the land and then having some land with Chocolate Park and inviting food trucks. And then as we grow, we just add on more space there. And the next page has it filled out where we still have room for at least a couple of food trucks visiting and still room for buses to stop. And I understand there's a lot of cross-border buses that come down that road and go on shopping tours. So I think it's a good opportunity for them to stop, and we could tap into that market as well. That's the parcel of land. The full build-out would we estimate cost about $8 million. We'd be putting about $6 million in machinery in. And, you know, over 5 to 7 years, start in phases. And that's, you know, rough estimate of probably how many people would be there in the first 3 years before we built out the whole thing. That would increase, but that's just kind of an estimate. We put some chocolate here, and there's some pictures in the brochure, but, you know, our chocolate we market it as a better for you. So a lot of dark chocolate, high cocoa content, organic, less sugar. It's got all the certifications, gluten-free, some of it's dairy-free, non-GMO, all that kind of on-trend, better for you snacking. So you'll see our product in Costco and Whole Foods and natural food markets, that type of thing, across the country. You can see here the one isn't replacing the other. The factory here is different than what the factory in Delta would. A little bit of crossover, for the most part, is Delta will remain as a molding and packaging factory, and Blaine will be a chocolate processing, and we'd actually send tankers of liquid chocolate up to Canada when we're finished making the liquid chocolate. They would continue the molding and the wrapping up there. So.
And then they would come down and they would fill the retail store and so forth, so people could actually see the finished goods.
Yeah. And we do some chip depositing and, again, some of that here, but the types of machinery are quite different. So that's just an example of success stories for...
A lot of people have traveled, whether they're going from Northern California or Southern California, they'll take that route up to Oregon, and it's a fascinating opportunity to see how... You know, the dairy is actually produced, and they're famous for the area. And it's, you know, I can ask anybody up there in Canada, and they, oh yeah, we've been through, or you know, we've heard about it. You know, so they have, you know, a great opportunity there to keep on, or not opportunity, but they have a great place that does educate a lot of people, and they really enjoy going there. A lot of families like going there, and so I'm sure most of the people around here have heard about that for sure. This is one of our customers, Theo, potential customers. We did do some stuff with him a few years back, but we're getting involved with them again. We make their product for them. They do make bean to bar chocolate, but they have the ability of only to make that product, where we have a factory in Vancouver where there's substantial manufacturing capabilities to make individual chocolate and also wrap things and make things very pretty. So we will make continue to make some of their product up in Vancouver for them. They supply us the chocolate. We make it with the packaging and so forth and send it back to them for their customers and their retail clients around the USA and Canada.
That's a great factory in Switzerland, again, with the glass catwalk, and you walk through a farm sort of when you go into the factory with the cocoa trees and fermentation boxes, and they're all kind of mocked up, but you really have a feeling as to how the chocolate's made, and then you go up through the catwalk and you see all aspects of the factory.
Yeah, some of these Europeans have, in fact, Rich and I were just in Italy and Switzerland last month, and we viewed a few more, so we get some more ideas about how we want to do our process, and you got some great opportunities to see some good things all over Europe.
This is the one. It was funny, this one. I was in there about 5 years ago when I was trying to get some ideas for Irvine, and I got a private tour at about, and this is the one that's 2 hours from Vienna, and it surprised me because he's a bit of a crazy guy, and he's a lot of windows and a lot of push button, and you get a shot of chocolate. So we did a bunch of that kind of stuff in Irvine, but I started my private tour at about 7 a.m. in the morning. We got up, we drove. About 7:30 we got there, and we were on the other side of the glass, so we were on the inside of the factory with a couple of machine suppliers. And anyway, by about 11 a.m., after seeing all the different processes and different machine on our private tour, I kind of noticed behind the glass wall hundreds and hundreds of people. And I was kind of surprised. And finally, by the time we worked our way up to the parking lot around noon, there were a dozen buses in the parking lot. And the parking lot that was empty when I had gotten there was full with 100 cars. There were bike racks with, you know, cross-country bicycles parked in cars, and people outside doing, you know, walking in the grass and doing something. And I was just shocked by how many people had come that far, because he'd really made that a destination. He'd really make it an experience. And that was... our place in Irvine isn't nearly as big or goes as far, but you know, our vision for the Gateway Park would be to be something like that, where we really become famous for people to make it a destination and come and stop and visit. And everybody loves chocolate, so it'd be our job to make it known. And with the amount of traffic, with the amount of traffic there, I think it's an ideal location.
Yeah. So, Rich and I both have quite a passion for chocolate. We've both been in the business for 34 years. Rich actually sold chocolate to me when I started. So now, about 6 years ago, we joined up together. So I've got my son in the business, and we also have we just think it's a great opportunity for this area here. And I can tell you that people do love and are passionate about chocolate, especially if they learn something new about it. I can see there's a high school here. There's going to be great opportunities for kids to work there, and give the tours, and the classes could learn all about chocolate. So I see lots of opportunities there. That's why they call me the VP of Opportunity. That's my title. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, right. I don't know. Do you have any questions or something that you might want to hear about? Or
anybody have any questions for these gentlemen? We will have a chance to... This is our action item this evening, so we could discuss it at that point as well. So, anybody have a question right now? No?
Nope.
We might have some later. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, audience participation. I don't see anybody signed up on the sheet. If there's anybody who did not sign up who would like to speak, before council, you're welcome to come forward. If not, we'll move on with our meeting. Next on the agenda is the Fire Chief's Report. Chief Hollander.
Good evening, Council.
Good evening.
We We don't do chocolate. But we respond to chocolate overdoses. So far this year, we have not responded to any chocolate overdoses. So that's a good thing. Tonight, I'm sharing with you a copy of our chief's report for activities through the month of October. And once again, our calls were up about a little over 10%, like we have been consistently. And Semiamu did a great job this month. Only two responses out there. 81 in the city, but only two out to Semiamu. So that's good. We are in the process of going through our annual audit. If you've ever been through an audit, that's a lot of fun. So far, so good. Our five new hires are on the floor, and they're all doing great. So they're getting some experience. And I guess the biggest thing I can tell you that's going on with the fire department right now is our chief is resigning as of the end of the year. So we'll be looking for a new fire chief starting January. I think our Board of Commissioners will make a decision, hopefully in December, on which company to use. I think they're leaning towards going to an outside company and to draw in some talent for the fire district. So that's, In the meantime, Assistant Chief Joan Winchester has been appointed acting chief. And they're expecting it three to four months to go through that process. So that's about it for the fire department today, unless you have any questions of me. Nope. Thanks.
Guess not. Thanks, Chief. Do we have any written communications? It says none, unless some came in today. Okay. Okay, we've got a marketing report on our Gateway property from Mr. Mike Kent.
Thank you. Obviously, from the previous presentation, we've been busy speaking with shooters and relaying information along. In the interim, though, we've had interest, but not anyone since my last presentation has actually put forth a written communication, letter of intent, purchase sale, etc. Have not heard back from the grocer at this point since our last meeting. One thing that has occurred, which will benefit Blaine in general and certainly our Gateway property, is Bellingham increasingly is running out of industrial property. There were a couple pieces that we had. One was at Hannigan Road. Jeff and Johnson and I had 22 acres there. That is now under contract with a backup office. That was a large parcel similar to Gateway that is now tied up and in escrow. And then the other industrial park was Marine Drive Industrial Park, which is now totally full, and the whole park sold. And we had a remaining piece of about 4 acres at the top end of it, and it'll be going under contract next week as well. So by default, we're getting attention, and the fact that the Canadian dollar is where it's at and the different factors affecting Canadian cross-border business, we continue to get interest of people bringing product down to the States in order to take advantage of our U.S. market by being at the U.S.'s doorstep. And we do see the amount of cost involved in bringing goods back and forth over the border. So we continue to focus on that and advertising, marketing, and such that we are the gateway to the United States. We're open for business. Mm-hmm. And as mentioned before, maybe we will be the sweet spot for business in the United States. So that's my report. Jeff Johnson, I wish he was here, but he has been under the weather with a medical issue the last few days. He's doing okay, but doctor said 5 days he can't move. So due to some blood clot issue.
Oh.
So
right.
Any questions for me?
Any questions? Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, next, under the consent agenda, we have approval of bills in the amount of $683,357.98, approval of the November 13th City Council minutes, and we also have a development agreement with the Port of Bellingham for deferral of water main improvements, and you do have some backup information in your packets regarding that. So would someone like to move to approve the consent agenda?
So move.
Second.
Moved by Councilor Hawkins, seconded by Councilor Erickson. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. 5-0. Okay, next we have a public hearing scheduled. It's a continuation of our 2019 budget hearing this evening. We will not be voting on the budget this evening, but at our next council meeting, we'll have final approval of the budget. And so I would our finance director like to make a few comments, continuing the discussion, and then I'll open the public hearing.
So, yes, I did provide a summary to the council and to the public at the last council meeting, and we've presented a balanced budget to the council at various council study sessions. So this really is an opportunity for the public to provide their written and or verbal testimony on the 2019 budget.
Okay. All right. So I will open the public hearing and remind everybody that we allow 5 minutes, there can be additional testimony if it's non-repetitive about the budget. And so who would like to be first? Looks like somebody might come forward from our audience this evening. All right. Kathy Sitker, our Senior Center Director.
Hi, welcome. Oh, welcome. Hi, everybody. I just want to say thank you to the city. It's been a busy, busy year at the center. And we're looking forward to a wonderful 2019. We're getting busier and busier. I had a lady come in today, just joined from Maine. I said, why do you come to Blaine? And she says, I have a daughter in Vancouver and I have children in Seattle. This is the area she can be. And we're having more and more people moving and coming to the center. Over the last 2 weeks, we've had 18 new members, brand new members, wow, out of state. So we're very, very busy there. I appreciate everything the city has done for us. And just want to say thank you.
Likewise. We appreciate what you do as well. It's a terrific senior center we've got. I think the best in the county, at least, if not the state. Would anybody else like to come forward and talk about any part of the budget or any questions? Okay, I guess people are here mainly to listen this evening. Okay, if there is no public testimony, I will close the public hearing and we will, like I said, be voting on this at our next meeting in, what is the date of our next meeting? 2 weeks.
December 10th.
10th? Okay, December 10th. All right, next, if you will excuse the council, we do need to go into an executive session for approximately 20 minutes, maybe? About 20 minutes, and we certainly encourage you to stay if you can. But we need to discuss certain items about the action item to come after that. So we will be back. You want to say a few minutes?
Just a brief introduction that after the executive session, we do expect there likely will be action or at least consideration of action on this item. And it is related to the sale of real property, but only the aspects related to price and matters of price, which is what the law limits us to. Much of the discussion will likely happen after you come out of the executive session.
Yes, yes. Okay. Our city attorney?
Yeah, thank you. This is just, we're dealing with the nuance of that case out of Port of Vancouver a year or so ago and what you can, the limits on executive session. So we can discuss the pricing of real property, but the factors that affect price we have to touch on before we go in executive session. So those factors can be the configuration, which we'll be discussing, and how the configuration of the property, the services of the property, matters that might be what insurance or what are the obligations relate in the purchase and sale agreement that you are being asked to undertake or not undertake, and all those factors can affect price. So those are the type of things that are outlined in this letter of intent that we will be addressing in the executive session. So it's a nuance that's difficult, and we're all agencies are trying to transition to the Supreme Court's decision, but we can address, again, discussion of price, but the factors that affect price we have to outline for you here before we go in.
But they can be discussed in executive session.
Okay.
But a couple of matters before we go into executive session, I thought we were going to do it when we came out, are the idea of the sale here of the entire parcel versus less than the entire parcel. In the past, we've discussed the idea of reserving portions of the property for retail-oriented uses or services that directly might be used or benefit by the citizens of Blaine, right? So folks might a new store or a different service that we don't already have in the community. But we've also talked about the issues of slicing the property into small pieces and selling, you know, only part and then having a piece left that might not be as desirable or easy to market. So there's two sides to that coin. I think that's just something you need to consider. There's not really a clear answer what's the best thing to do. It's really a matter of the market and the offers that are before you, and there is one here for the entire 7.1 acres. Another topic related to this, of course, is the idea of the use of the property being primarily manufacturing with an aspect of tourism, commercial, retail kind of activities. So the gateway zoning is designed to really encourage retail and service uses on the north part of our property and encourage manufacturing and transportation and warehousing uses on the southern part of the property. The southern part of the property is all spoken for now. So we are under contract with Boblett LLC to open a truck fueling station and a private vehicle fueling station as well as truck parking facility, essentially a truck stop. Just south of this property that we're looking at now, we're under contract with Covton, I can't remember the exact name, but essentially Covton Trucking to do a truck repair and maintenance facility on 4 acres that's at the very end of Boblett Court. That would also include additional truck parking and storage of trailers from the tractor trailers. And then, of course, as you know, we've already sold property to Mercer, who does logistics and pre-inspection for freight moving across into Canada. And we've also sold property to Chuckanut Bay Foods, who is currently under construction building their factory. So all of the remaining parcels that we might have available for sale for more manufacturing-type uses are already committed in one way or another. And this leaves the 7 acres to the north that kind of is the split between primarily manufacturing and primarily retail. That means that this project would need to obtain additional approval from the city to move forward. Just selling the property isn't enough, as it isn't for any project. People still need to get building permits and things like that. But in this particular instance, they'll need to seek a conditional use permit, certainly we'll need an extended period of time to go through that public process, 90 to 120 days, I would guess, to seek a conditional use permit, which is at the discretion of the Planning Commission, and it would be a matter of whether or not that project in its configuration with its proposed uses works and is compatible with the zoning, with the future and plan current uses around the site and in that zoning district. So it's not a given that decision is it fits, because there's a zoning code that really encourages this use to be slightly further south and more retail-oriented uses on the site. So those will all be considered, I think, aspects of your decision-making, and I think that the piece about the retail versus non-retail and the piece about services for the community of Blaine versus primarily a tourist-oriented item. I mean, certainly, as a resident of Blaine, I'm certainly going to buy chocolate there if it's there, but, you know, there may not be the priority for the community. So that's something you need to take into account, I think, as you have with all of your other proposals that have come before you, things like the hotel and the multifamily and, at one point, a grocery store and various items that have been under consideration. One last piece is that we are also working through the final bits of the sale and development of the Boblett property to the south, which is the Yorkston Company site, evaluating how we will drain this northern parcel when the whole stormwater system is designed. So that's an item that we'll want to talk a little bit about, because there are some costs that we may need to invest some money on the front end on the project to make sure this 7 acres has what it needs to drain to the regional pond, and that is also would be something potentially related to price that we may want to get into in more detail. Those are the items that really come to mind. It is a matter of use, a matter of the size of the property, whether it's you want to sell the whole thing or not, and then some of those logistics on the stormwater and services. As you know, of course, the project has already been approved through the, through a general binding site plan, so it has a variety of development conditions that have already been imposed, and that it would, those would carry over to the site plan review and the other, you know, further development on the property. And Alex, do you have any other items that you think are important to mention at this point?
No, I think you covered the conditional use and then a future site plan review.
Thank you.
And will we also be discussing later the Section 4 zoning approval issue of striking or revising it?
Well, that is, yeah, that is one ask. I don't know that we really need to discuss it further, but we certainly will need to modify that in your approval or strike it. That essentially mandates that the City Council essentially support the actions moving forward, which implies the City Council would take actions that you have to do through a public process with an opportunity for public comment, and you can't be contractually bound to do those things through through this. It would it would subvert the process, if you will.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that.
John, any other thoughts?
Okay. Now we'll go into session for about 20 minutes.